Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Simpoga. This evening, we'll talk about the deepening crisis in Burundi. And with us tonight is John Manirakiza. He's a member of the Burundi diaspora in the United States. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon, Douglas. Thank you for having me.
You're very much welcome. And we also have Suleiman Mugula, our regular panelist. He's an independent political analyst. He's joining us from Durban, South Africa. Good evening, Suleiman.
Good evening, Douglas, and your listeners.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for inviting me, as always.
You're welcome. Now, as I said, gentlemen, our topic tonight, we're looking at the deepening crisis in Burundi. As our listeners may know, President Pierre Nkurunziza tightened his grip on power after his disputed re-election on July 21st. As his opponents seek to resist him, residents of Burundian capital Bujumbura are increasingly getting used to sounds of gunfire and the reports of deaths in the morning. In two nights, there are two assassination attempts on high-profile figures from opposite ends of the political spectrum. One succeeded, the other failed. And this seems to be bad news for Burundi, as hopes for a peaceful resolution dim and the national community sort of runs out of ideas. First of all, John, any news from there, and are the grim reports from there what you're also getting?
Yes, thank you, Douglas. Yes, the situation is getting dire and dire every day. That Nkurunziza decided to stick on his guns, and so after the assassination of General Niyombare and or rather General Nshimirimana, Adolphe, and the attempt on the assassination of Bonimpa, five more political leaders at the local level have been killed in the last few days, as reported by the magazine African Mail Guardian. So the situation is not getting any better. Government is actually, at least the Minister for Foreign Affairs, has indicated they are open to reopening the negotiation. And the government and the political opposition and the civil society are now calling for calm, because the situation can go out of control pretty quickly in Burundi, knowing how volatile the situation is.
I see. Suleiman, John there mentions people calling for calm. But some observers say maybe the horse is out of the... I mean, has already left the... Because people warned against these kinds of crises should things stay as they are.
Precisely. As you are saying, what is happening is not unexpected. Slowly but steadily, Burundi is being pushed into outright violence. It was very clear. All signs were clear moving to that one. The intransigence of Pierre Nkurunziza was expected to lead to what is happening right now. Mm-hmm. Only what we can add on right now is to say that Nkurunziza is part of the cabal, is part of the breed of leaders in the Great Lakes region who once masqueraded as a new breed of leaders, but actually when it is a breed of brutal, arrogant, self-conceited dictators who have no regard for their countries, but who are just egocentric and thinking about themselves and their relatives other than the nation at large. He is plunging the country into outright violence, and we are going to see more and more deaths. Those calls of being calm, it is already too late, and the violence is likely to continue. unless something is done right in this very moment, either by the regional leaders or by the international community.
I see. Well, the recent assassinations of Burundi's former security chief and the attempted assassination of a prominent human rights leader underscore the growing tension in that country. But a new report by Human Rights Watch says there has also been a spate of arbitrary arrests and torture since April. That's when violence first erupted after President Pierre Nkurunziza announced he would seek a third term. Karina Tatasien is the Human Rights Watch senior researcher on Burundi. And from London, she spoke with my colleague, Jody Kapwa, about insecurity in Burundi.
Well, the report we've just published describes cases of arbitrary arrest, ill treatment and torture in particularly outside the capital, Bujumbura. So we carried out research in four provinces, as well as in the capital, and we documented more than 148 cases of arrests, torture or ill treatment, mostly by the intelligence services and by members of the Youth League of the ruling party, as well as some policemen. Most of these cases occurred in June and July, but some of them go back to April.
What caused a Human Rights Watch to look outside of Bujumbura for these violations?
International attention was very much focused on events in the capital. This was quite understandable because that was where most of the very dramatic incidents were occurring. But we also discovered that there were many abuses going on in other parts of the country. And these abuses have largely gone unreported because for the last couple of months, the government have prevented the independent private radio stations from broadcasting. So since April, May, the country's main private radios, which are really the main source of information on events outside the capital, have been off the air. This has meant that a lot of these very serious incidents have simply gone unnoticed.
Now, we've been hearing more and more reports of youth being involved in violent acts. What can you tell us?
Well, indeed, we documented many cases of attacks by the youth who are known as the Imbonerakure. These are members of the Youth League of the ruling party. This is not a new phenomenon, I should say. The Imbonerakure have been used by the ruling party to target their suspected opponents. We saw the same thing, in fact, around the last elections in 2010, and it's continued ever since. So the kinds of abuses that we've documented include arrests, which in themselves are illegal because members of the Youth League have no legal powers of arrest, so they're not allowed to arrest people. Nevertheless, they have been arresting people. They've been beating them up severely and then often handing them over to the intelligence services, where members of the intelligence services are then beating them again and sometimes even torturing them.
Now, I see that the national president of the Youth League, Dennis Carrera, has told Human Rights Watch in a meeting that he was not aware of these allegations, and he is quoted as saying, "I'm against all violence. I can't tolerate it. People who do it," he says, "should be tried and punished in accordance with the law." Can you tell us about the meeting you had with him?
Yes, well, this is not the first meeting we've had with him, but this time he did take a clear position against the violence and abuses, which is obviously a positive thing. He didn't say he wasn't aware of the allegations in general. He said he wasn't aware of each of the individual allegations that we brought to his attention. But he quite rightly said that the members of the Youth League who carry out abuses should be tried and punished in accordance with the law. Now, unfortunately, it seems that that position is completely ignored by many other authorities. What is really striking in almost all the cases that we've documented is that the people responsible for these abuses are not brought to justice. And indeed, one of the issues we're drawing attention to now is the way that the justice system in Burundi, which already was very weak, is now practically broken, I would say. There are decisions made by judicial authorities that are then torn apart or overruled by members of the government, by members of the intelligence services who are dictating who should be detained for how long, and the justice system is currently unable to function in an independent way.
Well, as you know, just in the recent days, there was the assassination of the former intelligence chief and the attempted assassination of a high-profile human rights leader. What is Human Rights Watch's reaction to those?
Well, we're extremely shocked by these two incidents, blatant acts of violence against high-profile individuals. The Burundian authorities should immediately carry out thorough investigations to find out who was responsible for these two attacks and bring those responsible to justice. In the case of Pierre Claver Bonima, the country's leading human rights activist, we're particularly worried about his security and his protection. He's still in hospital, slowly recovering from his injuries, but we're calling on the Burundian government to make sure that nothing happens to him. Our other great fear, of course, is that these two attacks could lead to further violence.
That was Karina Tatskian, the Human Rights Watch senior researcher in Burundi, and from London she spoke with VOA's Joe DiCapua. Now, Suleiman, your reaction to that report, and that country doesn't seem to appear as one that has just gone had an election.
Douglas, what is happening, actually, to put it in short, is if you have studied the politics in the Great Lakes region, you will find that most of these leaders within the Great Lakes region, they are almost being headed by Museveni of Uganda. When you look at the course of events, they are not different from where Museveni started from. After the power struggle, it is always followed by a purging period. And this is the purging period now in Burundi, where you find that different groups of people, either the security forces aligned to the president, or the youth groups within the system, they will start purging everybody whom they think that is against the regime. That is what is happening in Burundi. People are going to continue dying, especially from those whom they expect to be in the opposition. They are going to be detention without trial. They are going to be skewed imprisonments. They are going to be skewed cases opened up against the opposition, and then assassination. Then eventually the whole civil service will be purged, and then it will be replaced by people who are expected to be pro-Nkurunziza. Then it will transform from a deceptive, brutal system to a benevolent, so-called pseudo-democratic system. Then from there, he will go until his death in power. That is what is happening in Uganda. That is what has been sold to Rwanda. That is what has been sold to DRC. It is going all over to Central African Republic. That is what Salva Kiir wants to plant in southern Sudan. All of it is emanating from Museveni. He's the godfather. The script they are using, you don't need to go far. If you look at what Museveni, all the statement, all the rhetoric, and all the tricks he has used, these are the tricks which are being used by Nkurunziza and the group, or by Kagame, or the DRC Kabila.
Are you concerned that this violence is not restricted in the capital, but according to Human Rights Watch report, it's even across the country, there are arrests and torture and all those kinds of things?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, we've said it all along that the whole notion that it was just a small part of the capital that was in protest was misleading, because as the Human Rights Report says that the lack of media outside of Bujumbura just allowed the government to basically go have all these parallel systems. So you have official institutions such as the security forces, and Nkurunziza has actually so far succeeded in creating an official institution such as these militias and the intelligence system that is doing all this work. Hopefully, as I mentioned, that last week the opposition and some member of civil society met in Addis Ababa, and they created a council that is led by Leonard Nyangoma. They have actually said that Nkurunziza, after August 26, he will not be considered as a legitimate president. They are asking him to actually step down or begin negotiations immediately.
And do you think that's possible?
In terms of possibility, what happened was a strong statement, because the former presidents were part of the meeting, opposition parties, even members of the SNDD-FDD party who were purged were part of that, including the second vice president and the former president of the National Assembly. And they came up with measures that they were even basically asking for immediate release of prisoners. They think about once they're going to ask for a transitional government, and that transitional government will actually set up for new elections. So those are things that are very clear, and people have agreed on the need for transitional government.
Suleiman, John, there reports, I mean, mentions those demands on Pierre Nkurunziza and his government. But these were the calls that were made even before this disputed election, by not only from some people in AU, the United Nations, some countries in the West, the United States, the European Union, those who give aid to Burundi, had called for some change before the election took place. What do you think would now change Mr. Nkurunziza's mind to accede to these demands?
The only difference, Douglas, is that unfortunately, Burundi, unlike other countries, in the Great Lakes regions, it may have a lot of guns in the hands of the various groups, a lot of guns which are likely to cause a lot of chaos. The way they have started the shooting of the general is a clear sign that the opposition is not likely to take it lying down. They managed to give Mr. Nkurunziza a very quick and decisive warning that should he continue, then they are ready to operate, and they have not been silent. And the biggest problem now, which is going to cause problems, is that it seems as if neighboring countries are going to be sucked in, because it seems it's intransigent, but even the armed opposition seems to be ready to cause chaos. So if he's prevailed on, maybe he might, but it is unlikely, because all of them have started like that. Because in the wrong run, we had a disastrous genocide in Rwanda. In the wrong run, we had a 20-year running civil war in Uganda. In the wrong run, we have had a very destructive civil war in southern Sudan. So these intransigent leaders, this generation of self-conceited and arrogant, brutal dictators, they listen to nobody. Mm-hmm. As of now, it is not clear who will stop him.
I see. Well, for our listeners, in case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the deepening crisis in Burundi. Our panelists are John Manirakiza, a member of the Burundi diaspora in the U.S., and Suleiman Mgula, an independent political analyst based in South Africa. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Now, John, for those who don't know, can you tell us the role or the impact of this youth league, the Imbonerakure?
Well, yes. So it it starts from the idea that the political parties have young people's leagues. And for Burundi, what has happened in Burundi is a failure by the international community when they did the comprehensive peace agreement to do a full demobilization and disarmament of people who have arms. So they actually identified that at the time they had like 250,000 small weapons in the country between the warring factions. And they were only able to remove from them something like 100,000, meaning that the remainder of those weapons stayed with the people. And all these so-called demobilized fighters went back to be part of that, what they supposedly call Youth League. But if someone is over 30, he's not supposed to be a young person, but they still call them Youth League. So all these people, in order to placate them, the government has been able to use them as people who are doing vigilante type of work, going and surveying at night and stopping people and asking them why are they walking late at night. So that's what I was calling. I say that they had a kind of a parallel security system besides the police and the forced arms, the army. So, and this group has actually become very, very strong under this late General Nshimirimana. So they were the rainmakers. They kill and decide what to do. So that's the root cause of the problem. And Nkurunziza has used those young people, supposedly young people, to intimidate everybody into submission. Everybody who doesn't feel like Nkurunziza has the divine right to rule Burundi forever become a threat and basically a subject of violence.
Suleiman, with multiple security forces, these are militia, not security forces, that doesn't augur well for the security of the country.
That is one of the tricks which have been running around in these dictatorial regimes. You find, number one, unlike in Uganda where, or in DRC or in Rwanda where the security institutions have been personalized because of the Arusha Accord and because of the nature of history of Burundi, as my friend has said, my brother has said there, they did not demobilize them, they left them with the arms, so the arms which are within the different factions are already a recipe for chaos. That is why they are able to attack a senior general and they kill him in an instant. That one shows you already why the whole international community was worried about what is likely to happen in Burundi. So these various factions, they are likely to cause more chaos, more death, more bloodshed. Unless something is done by the international community, we are not going to see peace. We are not going to see security of people in Burundi. And also, it is likely to suck in the neighboring countries.
Talking of peace, Suleiman, still, and I'll also ask John later the same question. Given what's happening in Burundi, What's the criteria? What's the moral standing of Burundi having peacekeepers in Somalia?
I mean, those are one of the tricks which have been used by these dictators in the Kigali region. You'll find that they have been able to blindfold the international community, especially the USA and other allied countries by throwing their forces all around, pretending to be peacekeepers. But it is just an opportunistic act, because when you look at Rwanda, I mean Burundi, Burundi is one of the poorest countries in the world. Why should it have its forces to be in these various countries, Somalia, Rwanda, Uganda? They have all forces there. Yes, they might be paid by the UN and the other countries, but still there are expenses which are incurred by these very countries. So the being there, it was just a facade. Being there was just an opportunist act to buy themselves favor from the international community so that they can continue, so that they can blindfold them and continue to perpetuate themselves in power. They can continue to get aid under the pretext of saying they are very good leaders who can even worry about other people's needs in the neighboring countries. Otherwise, it is meaningless. It is not necessary. It is not sanctioned by the people, the people of these particular countries. It is just an opportunistic act by the individual leaders at the expense of the population.
John, should Burundi keep its peacekeepers elsewhere when there's no peace at home?
Well, good question. Well, I think, as Brother Suleiman just mentioned, it becomes a bargaining chip for these rulers. And they can actually make threats of removing or getting their soldiers out of peacekeeping missions if they don't get their way. But to come back to Burundi, peacekeeping has been very good for Burundi. It allowed the former soldiers of the former government and the rebels to integrate into one security force that was so far has been shown to be professional. And you could even see at the beginning of this crisis that the police was more violent and more killing the people, while the military were kind of trying to stay neutral and stay Republican. So it will be a shame if these the professional military services would be victims of this President Nkurunziza ambitions. But it's a good question. No one has an answer to that.
Lastly, Suleiman, in the last few seconds left, how do you see this Burundi crisis getting resolved?
The bottom line, Douglas, is that dictatorship is a destructive act. In whatever form it is practiced, whether benevolent or outright, so long as it is a dictatorship, it denies the country the right to progress. It has got no advantages. At the moment, we are heading for chaos. There might be some security the way the Godfather in Uganda says that he has created security, but it is security after a lot of bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
I think the international community needs to watch the situation now to avoid the bloodshed before the settlement.
I see.
Because it's not enough for people to praise themselves to have created security when they walked over people's blood and over dead bodies.
John, in the last 20 seconds, how is this getting resolved?
Well, I see the leaders in Burundi, that is the opposition and civil society and the government, coming back to the negotiating table,
mm-hmm.
and allowing for a transitional government. Because within this situation, there's no way Burundi can avoid a bloodshed and civil society, a civil war.
I see.
And the region should do everything they can. The UN and African Union have put in Museveni's hand the ability to do the negotiation.
Well, we're out of time, gentlemen. I'd like to thank our panel, John Manrakiza, a member of the Burundi diaspora in the U.S., and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst. Thanks very much, gentlemen, for being on the show.
Thank you so much for having us.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mvunganya, and our engineer was Chang. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. And until then, I wish you a very good evening. I'm Douglas Impoga in Washington.